Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, president and founder of SMIE Consulting, and we stand for our social media and international education consulting. So that's what we do. And today, what I'd like to do, for those of you who are new to our Midweek Roundup, this is our weekly chat on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, where we hope to talk to you about three current issues in international education that seem to be getting a lot of attention in the press. And we'll talk today about three of those that are particularly concerning for those in international education. A couple of positive stories in here, but also one that has gotten quite a lot of press in the last week, not only here in the United States, but abroad. And we'll share what that story is in just a moment. For those who are not already subscribed to our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter, I'm putting up the link now to that, the most recent edition, this from this past Monday. And for those new to the Midweek Roundup, this live chat, we pull three of the topics from that newsletter each week to talk more in depth here on the Midweek Roundup. So if you want to get a preview of some of the things we might be talking about here on Wednesdays, subscribe to the e-newsletter, and that's a link to the most recent edition where you can see what we're talking about. And also to hit the subscribe button on that page, we'll get you signed up and get you this newsletter in your inbox every Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern. So that's that resource certainly want to make you aware of, as well as our SMIE Consulting website, and that's smieconsulting.org. It's great, a lot of great free resources on that site for you to find out more about what we do at SMIE Consulting, as well as not just the services we provide for fee-based services, but also a lot of the free resources we have there from our newsletter archive, the chat archive from our midweek roundups, which are also available on podcasts. And we certainly want to make sure we accommodate you whenever we can and provide resources that are going to be useful to you in your daily work in international education. Obviously, this week is a week that we'll see a lot of my colleagues around the country and around the world getting ready for NAFSA. NAFSA conference starting in Washington, D.C. Next Monday with, obviously over the weekend actually, with workshops, but Monday night into Tuesday. We'll see the beginning of the conference proper. So looking forward to reconnecting with many of you at that event. And if you haven't already made an appointment to get a hold of us, please do feel free to message me, and we'll certainly get on your dance card for next week. Looking forward to having some great conversations on these issues and more. First issue I want to bring to everybody's attention today is one that has been popping up a lot, not only in U.S. press with the ongoing trade war between the United States and China, but also a lot of the political tensions that exist. We've talked before about China's role in increasing their soft power around the world through their Belt and Road Initiative, where they've piled over almost $1 trillion worth of investment into dozens and dozens, if not over 100 countries in the last 5 to 10 years, with the attempts of expanding their soft power. And part of that has involved higher education, but there's also part of that higher education shift is also a darker underbelly of what's happening with Chinese, particularly doctoral students and research scholars that might be coming to the United States, to other Western nations, with military backgrounds and maybe involved in some sort of espionage. There's been U.S. hearings in the Senate. There's been concerns in Britain, in Australia, and Germany as well on this very issue. We've talked in the past about Confucius Institutes and their role in the United States and other countries, and how many of them have been shutting down over the last 2 or 3 years. A number of them recently have been closing because of concerns by the institutions that were looking to maintain their U.S. Department of Defense funding for Chinese language programs that the U.S. government is now not allowing institutions that have Confucius Institutes to also receive this Department of Defense funding. So there's some very serious concerns at the highest levels of government, not just in the United States, but in other countries as well. And that's one that this article I'm posting now in the comments section certainly reflects. It's out of it's a Times Higher Ed article that actually focuses on an Australian institution, Australian Vice Chancellor, who mentions in the article is a former chief of defense scientist of Australia who has recently become a vice chancellor of University of Newcastle in Australia last November. So he spent 6 years as the country's chief defense scientist. Said that higher education institutions, in his words, were unrealistic if they thought they could work with any partner on any research topic. And this is also a concern, particular concern for some of the moves that the Trump administration has taken related to Chinese students over the last couple of years, particularly focusing on scholars and those in STEM fields that might be coming to the United States, that might have ties to Chinese military, that are being extremely vetted at the highest levels for any renewals of visas because of concerns of this kind of government-sponsored espionage in effect. So what's happened, and certainly this vice chancellor in Australia is particularly sensitive because the universities in Australia and in the U.S. and the U.K. as well have become increasingly reliant on China and its students for funding, and particularly at the postgraduate level, where there's a growing concern, according to the article here at Times Higher Ed, that potential theft of intellectual property and some Chinese researchers' ties to the People's Liberation Army in China. These are particularly of concern. There was a bill introduced in the U.S. Senate this past week, and that is referenced in this article, that would prevent any visas, researcher visas, J-1 visas, or F-1 visas, going to any Chinese individual who had ties to the PLA, and that's certainly something that is obviously is being considered at the highest levels to be a threat to national security. So be very interested to hear. We oftentimes in higher ed get caught in our own bubbles and think that all actors are good actors, and the truth is anything but. And it's sometimes we hold everybody else, believe everybody else is living at a very different, on our standards, that they would never come to our country and try and do something like this. So this is something that I think we all need to perhaps step outside our own worlds and look at it from the eyes, and certainly this vice chancellor coming to the university sector has had background working in the defense industry in Australia about what that looks like. So it'll be very interesting to see what that might mean. The next story I want to cover related to this is an opinion piece by Marguerite Dennis, who had been at Suffolk University for a number of years and a prominent international educator and very well respected in the field. The title of her piece in University World News is a little bit misleading. Fewer Chinese students in the U.S. may not be a bad thing. In her article, she references five different areas that are contributing to fewer students from China enrolling in U.S. colleges and universities. The trade war, geopolitical rivalries that we've talked about, cybersecurity concerns is the second piece she mentions, the disadvantages of a U.S. degree. And this takes a piece from an Inside Higher Ed story back on April 11th that referenced, and we talked about it here on the midweek roundup, that a Chinese postgraduate student at Princeton conducted a survey of more than 27,000 fictitious job applications for entry-level positions in Chinese companies and reported that graduates of American universities, even brand-name schools, were 18% less likely to get a callback than applicants who graduated from Chinese universities. And there's a lot of other pieces of that puzzle, too, that suggests that it's not just a bias towards Chinese applicants, but it's maybe a negative bias against, well, they're not going to come to China and work right away. They've got better opportunities in the United States. So there's other pieces of that. So it's not a completely broad brush that you can paint that picture with. You also see decline. The fourth reason she looks at is that fewer Chinese students are studying abroad. In 2017, according to the data, 900,000 Chinese students were studying outside of the country. And that was growing from about 5% a year between 2012 and 2015 to about half that rate in 2017, projected per annum increase by 2027. So it's still growing, but just not as fast as it has been. So, and they're having other options in terms of where they can go as well. So that was the fourth piece she looked at. And then another piece that I've certainly seen firsthand, going back to the mid-90s, certainly in the last 15, 20 years, the Chinese government has spent not only over $1 trillion trying to spread their soft power globally through the Belt and Road Initiative, but also through a huge investment in their own nation's higher education infrastructure and building up of universities to a point where many more are now in the top 200. Seven Chinese universities are in the top 200 globally in the Times Higher Ed rankings. You all also have over 1,200 total recognized in Times Higher Ed. So what we also look at in terms of universities in China, there's certainly been a growth in the prominence of universities in China that are coming onto the global scene. But what we're also seeing is some other interesting niches that they're getting into with their partnership programs and such. So interesting to keep our eye on China. I think there's always going to be more to see, more to the pitch, to the story than we particularly know in certainly the press. But certainly I'd be interested to hear from those of you on campus in terms of your perspectives and how they may have been changing over the last few years related to the Chinese presence on your campuses. Now, one thing, we'll shift gears to our second topic, which is a much more positive one, and one that I hope many more institutions embrace in the coming months and years, and that's the model that Karen Fisher has written. For those who don't know Karen, she's the international ed reporter for Chronicle of Higher Ed, very good writer, and has done a number of in-depth pieces on international ed over the past few years, and one certainly a well-respected journalist, and looking forward to seeing her next week at NAFSA as well. But this week, she had a story came out this past week from Rutgers University on modeling success. And they have had, as many large state institutions have had over the past decade, they had a significant number increase in the international student populations coming to their campus. And that had led to some growing pains, and we would have, there would be people in certain departments as issues grew that really had concerns that we've seen echoed in other countries and other U.S. institutions about concerns from faculty about the international students' academic performance, from advising, career counseling, their English proficiency, their integration into the campus community. So these were significant concerns that have happened across the country in the United States, but also globally. At Rutgers, they took a very concentrated approach to help integrate international student concerns into a number of different offices on campus. And that's something that has improved campus-wide collaboration and has created programs such as peer mentoring and first-year transition courses that have helped to address a lot of these issues. So academic success has been a very common theme for new international students in terms of obviously institutions having at their root and stem, if they're really at their core of who they are, is they want to be able to take care of their international students once they're on campus and provide the services that they need to succeed. Because if those students don't succeed and have a bad experience, they go home and they tell two friends and so on and so on. They had created at Rutgers a central office to address the various needs of international students, to reduce redundancy, But one of the most important roles, according to the article from the folks at Rutgers, it also acted as a convener of the campus community for issues related to international students. And it's done something to really help scale up a lot of the services that they wanted to provide themselves, not just through what they had been doing through their own office, but also to broaden that campus-wide. They had certainly had some funding that was secured for their initial startup, for their initial two-person office. They have also brought in a number of other offices like career services. We've all heard from recent surveys about the importance of outcomes of education, not only for domestic students, but international students as well. Parents who are spending close to $100,000 or more on tuition over 4 years certainly want to know what the possible outcomes are in terms of jobs, in terms of career and graduate schools, whatever it might be. At Rutgers, Career Services, after this initial central office theme had kicked off, they recently added three positions focused on international career advising. And Health Services hired a Mandarin-speaking mental health counselor. We know our Chinese students have particular issues that they need, and if that's such a significant population on your campus, how are you catering to that need that in terms of addressing mental health concerns for that group? Now it's also about leveraging the capacity of the campus the Rutgers campus, leveraging the capacity of the campus to support international students. And leveraging the strength of your existing students is certainly a part of that puzzle for Rutgers. Using international students themselves, they have they did a pilot project for a one-credit transition course for students. Had 100 students in the first year enrolled in that. Now it is a required course in three of the university's largest colleges in little more than a year. That has scaled up correctly. And that they're pairing leaders with international student leaders with teaching assistants in a couple of programs on campus. They are really a place for international students with this new international student office, where students are an important piece of the puzzle there, where they are. It's not only helping international students get their needs met, but also helping the campus do a better job with its students. So great piece by Karen addressing this issue. Certainly encourage all of you to take a look at that, because I think it really speaks to a lot of where we want to be as institutions in terms of addressing the needs of our international students. So great, and that's obviously a large state institution example, but I think does give us a lot of opportunities for identifying where we can grow as institutions in meeting needs of our international students. So let's take a look now at our final issue of the day. And this is one that's particularly appropriate with NAFSA coming up next week. And it's one that I think I've talked about on this midweek roundup before, about transnational education. And what does that really mean? And it really is the conducting of one institution's or one country's education overseas, in an overseas format. So when an institution opens a branch campus in another country or has an office overseas that for a particular department that conducts academic classes and programs, that's transnational education. It's not study abroad, because that's individual students going abroad and coming back. This is where the education, an American education, a British education, an Australian education happens outside of the home country, the education system. This is similar to international schools that are either American-style or British-style curriculums around the world. That's what transnational education means. At the higher education level, there's certainly been an expansion of institutions that are offering post-secondary education. Sulav, thanks for joining all the way from Kathmandu. Hope you're well. Looking forward to, if you're going to NAFSA next week, certainly look forward to seeing you there. I know you're not with Education USA anymore, but certainly at the embassy, I don't know if you're fortunate enough to be making that trip this year, but if you are, great, I'll see you. If not, I'm sure I'll see you around on Facebook. But this report here from the On University World News addresses something that I've certainly seen happen over the last decade or so, is the expansion of institutions that are opening branch campuses overseas. There are now, let's take a look at the hard numbers. There are now 263 international branch campuses in 2017, end of 2017. That has grown from only 160 in 2009, so up significantly, 65% increase around the world in the past decade, really. Philip Altbeck has, from the Center for International Higher Education at Boston College, certainly an expert in the field and certainly knows, has been keeping his eye on this mushrooming, as he calls it, that they are the most traditional examples of transnational higher education, and that exports universities in countries with income and soft power. This, according to the article. The popularity of branch campuses is certainly there, but it's not the only way universities are exporting their education abroad. We've talked about how the U.S. actually is pretty far behind in this regard in terms of the branch campuses. There are probably less than two dozen U.S. campuses that have U.S. institutions that have branch campuses abroad. Many are in the Gulf. There's several in China. The model of I've certainly seen that's been around the longest is Webster University. They have branch campuses throughout Europe, in China, in Thailand. They're certainly the one that I've seen following the transnational ed model in the most significant way. For the longest time. So what the article also focuses on is now this other thing and this other piece of transnational ed called having offices abroad, where these are offices abroad are more like outposts that are certainly smaller than a branch campus. They might be in one building or a floor in the building. That where they're exporting universities, offices, gateways, that type of thing, but they're also conducting education opportunities, classes are offered. So in a way, these are potentially study abroad where students from the home campus might go overseas to study there. But the focus really of these, many of these offices is to educate locals now of that country in whatever the subject is. So where those are opened up, certainly there's great possibilities for expansion to local communities when these offices are. Now here's this report that mentioned all these 263 international branch campuses. Harvard University has only one international branch campus, and that's in the United Arab Emirates, their Medical School Center for Global Health Delivery in Dubai. But they do have, so they got one branch campus, but they have 22 offices abroad. And the article goes on to explain a couple of those, one of which is in Tunisia, another one in India that were set up, another one in Turkey that was set up in 1958 that focuses on archaeology. Another one, the one in Tunisia, focuses on Middle Eastern studies. The one in India focuses on family, the family. It's called the Family South Asia Mittal and Family South Asia Institute. So talks about cross-border internationalization. So that's a lot of why these are potentially more popular at a school like Harvard that has the money to do what they want, where they want. There are significant advantages in cost savings, certainly. Where you have a branch campus, you often have a complete mirroring of the administrative structure that you have on the home campus in terms of presidents and faculty, president, vice presidents, and all the provosts and then deans of colleges and that might be in operation at that international location. then all the support services are in place. And we know from our own experiences here in the United States how significant those support services are in U.S. terms to student success and student engagement, and also attracting students to those campuses. But when you have just a single focused administrative or educational unit that is making up these offices, that tends to be a much more successful one, according to, at least in terms of numbers, doesn't require as significant a financial investment, and really allows the focused quality control. That, according to ALTBAC, student body must largely match the one at home in terms of selectivity and quality when you have a branch campus. But the reality is, to have so many different programs that might not be as attractive for international audiences abroad as they would be in the United States, there's some real issues there. So these offices operate in a less risky way. So that's very interesting to see that. The article is actually written by a Turkish professor at Boğaziçi University in Turkey, and does work. He works as a postdoctoral scholar at the Boston College Center for International Higher Ed. So very interesting piece, and certainly recommend taking a look at that. And certainly if your institution is engaged in international higher ed, certainly worthwhile checking that out. Now, I do want to speak briefly about the NAFSA conference. Obviously, we know next week is when it's all going to kick off, and that's going to be just an enormous program that certainly encourage everybody to who has a chance to go to check out. For those of you who will be attending, I certainly recommend there are a number of international enrollment management sessions that are just going to really, I think, knock your socks off in terms of quality. And I do, because I am giving one of those sessions, I hope, do want to give a shout out to those who want to maybe check that out. My session is going to be I've got a great panel that's coming, Karen Bauer, Education USA REAC, from parts of the Middle East and Central Asia, as well as Marie Whalen from Whitworth University in Washington State. Really looking forward to having an opportunity to talk with all of you about this. This topic is on the value of translations in international student recruitment, the successful use of native language content, and we'll be covering a range of different topics that related to this, looking at what translations work best where, on the web, in print, live events, chats, online forums. So we'll talk about all of that at our session, and that's going to be Wednesday, May 29th from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. in the Washington Convention Center, room 154 A and B. So we certainly hope you can make it to this. I'm going to be posting the links on my Facebook page and elsewhere, and certainly encourage each of you to make it if you're going to be there. So looking forward to coming to NAFSA next week. And Brian, thanks for jumping on the podcast. Hope all's well with you. If you want to catch the recordings of this, check out the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting that you're watching this on. But also you can check out our YouTube channel for a playlist that has all the archives of these midweek roundups. But if you prefer to listen to me and not watch me, definitely download or subscribe to our SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup podcast, available on all your favorite podcast providers, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, and Spotify. So looking forward to seeing many of you next week in Washington, D.C. for the NAFSA conference. Otherwise, we'll see you around in social media world as the days and weeks progress. And we'll be doing, just a heads up, we will be doing a live midweek roundup from NAFSA, from the Expo Hall in NAFSA next week. So looking forward to seeing some of you join me then. Have a wonderful day. Cheers.